Now, the Bible is, of course, the primary source of our understanding of faith. And by reading it and exploring it, we get to know the person, God, who is behind it, whose nature and character and purposes are described in it. We see what faith means. We see how it influences and alters life, how it begins to re-engineer the DNA of human nature so that we can start to become the fulfilled people that God created us to be. And it's good to gather really simply like this and to celebrate our faith together and to reinforce our faith with those stories and by worshipping together, by listening to those faith stories of people with whom we worship week in, week out. This kind of service should remind us of what this experience is that we share, but which we find so difficult to put into words. And Tim said that. It's difficult to put it into words. We often think that if it were as simple as actually writing down a formula on a piece of paper and proving it to people, how wonderful it would be. But of course, then that takes out the whole meaning of faith. Faith is something that you don't have proved to you, that you believe in. And again, as Heather said, despite even in the darkest moments of your life, it's something that you know with certainty that has only been proved to you by experience, by trusting and then understanding that faith begins to seep into all those areas of life to actually underpin everything that you do and say. And if we were able to somehow summarize it as a creed, it would probably sound so far-fetched that few who had no experience would be likely to be drawn to it. If you were to try to describe the qualities of Jesus, his love, his ability to forgive all of our wrong, the depth of his passion to see everyone inherit the life that God created for them and that led him to sacrifice his life on the cross, it may mean something. It may just jolt the emotions. It may even provoke a few to explore a little further. But words alone rarely bring about such a change of heart that life is transformed in the way that we've heard it described in this morning's testimonies. Trying to get people to understand that faith is not a purely intellectual exercise. If we try and do that, it's usually fruitless. But it must be said, of course, that God can always use the driest statement of stripped-down doctrine to that end, should he choose to. St. Augustine, who lived 1,600 years ago, one of the early church fathers, said this. I've updated the language slightly. Understanding is the reward of faith. Therefore, seek not to understand that you may believe, but believe that you may be understood. It's what often we call the leap of faith, isn't it? It's having to commit oneself first to believing what one does not initially understand. And in a largely sceptical world, that can seem like a tall order. Blind faith, some might call it. And one view common among atheists is that faith is simply a crutch. Here's a little illustration you can see. I found this on the internet. It amused me greatly. Can you see? He's got a dunce's hat on. It says dunce, and they're leaning on a crutch which says religion. So really, it's non-discriminatory. It means all religions, clearly. So it's not just anti-Christian. But a lot of people, I remember in my early Christian days when I was struggling to make sense of everything, I believed, but my understanding was catching up bit by bit. And I wasn't then in a position actually to explain much or to justify much, and certainly not to prove anything, because it can't be proved. I remember one of my work colleagues said, well, religion's just a crutch, isn't it? And so I said, well, what do you mean? I hadn't heard it described in that way before. And he said, well, if you can't cope with life, if you have struggles and, things aren't going your way, then you fall back on it, don't you? I said, oh, that's interesting. I don't really experience it that way, but it's something I just kind of stored there. It's seen as something that you can fall back on if you can't make things work for yourself. Something that comforts you when you're sad and afraid. The irony, of course, is that though faith does certainly mean certainty and comfort, those things are but a tiny fraction of the wholeness of life that true faith brings. Faith is not a crutch for the lame. It's the breaking of chains. It's the thing that keeps us spiritually and emotionally dependent on those chains are the things that keep us dependent on the systems and the social constructs of society. And chains are broken when we find that Jesus Christ is the answer to all of our needs and all that we truly want. So here are two reasons briefly why the Bible helps us to see that our faith is to be celebrated. The first one I've just called Celebrating Faith in Action. Because we make, we celebrate the fact that faith has made a difference to us. Again, we hear it in life stories, we hear it in testimonies. What a difference faith has actually meant to us. And although we'll never be able to collate enough empirical evidence to prove to the doubting world beyond the church that faith is effective as a life system, that it's more than an effective system, it brings wholeness and fullness of life. Although we can never really prove that, the only proof that people will ever get that faith works is through you and me, through telling our stories, through living in the way that God has set for us to live so that it will be an effective witness, not simply by doing good deeds, but by doing good deeds because of our faith which cannot be kept within us. Because it just moves from us when we feel it, when we know it, when we know God, we hunger and we thirst for him. That's what the psalm tells us. We want more. We just have to know more of God. We have to grow closer to him. And so we're encouraged actually to not just to live our faith in terms of its doctrine and to be generous, to give alms to the poor, to come to church. It's about far, far more than that. It's about a whole lifestyle, isn't it? And again, we've heard how fundamentally faith affects our lives. We've heard that at least three times this morning. So we believe that faith actually makes a difference to us. And it's not meant that we only believe certain things, but that we live out what we believe. So when Paul writes, rejoice in the Lord always, he's not merely asking them to be happy and smiley when they go about their business so that others will see how content they are. Paul is actually saying that to be content, to rejoice, to celebrate faith is the perfectly natural expression and outworking of that faith which holds somebody in close communion with Christ. One theologian said that Christian joy is independent of all things on earth because it has its source in the continual presence of Christ. Christian joy is independent of the all things on earth because it has its source in the continual presence of Christ. And Paul goes on to speak about gentleness. Now, that's an interesting word. We think about being gentle and meek, and that's a good thing too. Gentleness is one of the fruits of the Spirit, but the Greek word actually doesn't mean that. It's one of those hard words to actually translate exactly. It has a sense of moderation, of generosity, of mercy. So in other words, when we're going about our normal lives, faith expresses itself in almost going the extra mile, not sticking to the letter of the law. So if somebody has somebody's offended you, the letter of the law might mean, well, you have recourse to law about that. You know, there's a real problem and I need to stand up for my rights. This word gentleness, it means being just and merciful. Not just justice in the sense of the law, but justice in the sense of God's law. It means moderating our response, which most people would say, well, you're quite right to do that. They deserved it. And that may be the view of society. But Christians live a gentle life. Paul says live with gentleness, with moderation, with restraint, with grace, with mercy, with a sense that these people matter to God and my faith can actually touch their lives. Do you remember the time when the Enniskillen bomb went off and the reaction with one father was pretty instantaneous? I forgive them. And the media said, how can you possibly forgive that? It's unforgivable. They've taken the young life of your daughter. How is that forgivable? And I guess many of us would wonder at that, wouldn't we? We'd marvel at it. We'd think, would I be as gracious? Would I be as merciful, forgiving, as moderate, as gentle with someone who I didn't even know, who I didn't even think had repented of that particular horrific crime. Could I find it within myself to forgive? Could I moderate my feelings so that they would know that they are forgiven by not just my grace, but the grace of Christ within me? So Paul speaks about gentleness in that respect. He says, don't be anxious. Take it all to God. This is what I mean about testimonies, just fitting in perfectly. At my lowest moment, Heather said, I could give it all to God. I knew that he loved me. Cast your cares on Jesus, Peter wrote in his first letter, because he cares for you. And whenever you do take your anxieties to Jesus in faith, you will find that peace of God which transcends all understanding, and that will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. And then he says, focus on the good and wholesome things in life, because these will build up your faith. They will help you build up each other in community. We celebrate that faith makes a difference to us. Faith in action. And then secondly, we can celebrate that faith makes a difference to the world. Again, as far-fetched as it may sound, God has promised clearly in his word that a restoration will happen. He's planned the ultimate rescue act for this damaged and disrupted world. The words of Isaiah 61, I think we've got them, hopefully, the Isaiah words from right there at the beginning. The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord, excuse me, is on me, because the Lord has anointed me to preach good news to the poor. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom for the captives, release from darkness for the prisoners, and to comfort those who mourn. They were given to the prophet to encourage the people of Israel, damaged by many years of captivity away from their homeland. And let's remember, their homeland was really important to them. It was a gift from God at the beginning of his calling. And to be deprived of it, to be taken from it, was one of the worst things that could have happened to them. They were bound to it in their identity in God. And they knew that it was a sign that God had left them alone, punished them, if you like, for their departure from him when they were removed forcibly from their homeland. But these words of Isaiah were given to them. They would see their world restored. And Isaiah 61 verse 7 that we didn't read out promises that they would actually find everlasting joy. That's quite some promise, isn't it? But this restoration promised by God goes much, much further than the rehabilitation of those he first chose to model faith in him. The nature of this everlasting joy, which his people will know, is unveiled some 700 years after this was written in the book of Revelation, which speaks of a new heaven and a new earth coming together, a time and a place where the original perfection of the Garden of Eden will be recreated. Only this time, it will be permanent. It will be not subject to the sins, the interventions, the aspirations of humanity. This time, God will set it all in permanent order. Those who rejoice in their faith in Christ, those who have been celebrating faith throughout their lives and their words, through their words and their deeds, will continue to celebrate in heaven. In the meantime, though, God has a plan. We are the plan. It's us. We are the plan. When our lives and our words and our actions are extensions of what we believe, when there's a connection and a consistency between what we believe and how we live, faith suddenly becomes visible and believable and infectious. Is faith a crutch, some kind of backstop or safety net, a comfort blanket that we can run to when things are tough? No. As we've already said, faith does give us comfort and security, nonetheless, but to a degree that can't be measured or described simply in terms of feeling better. We celebrate the fullness of faith that we have not yet seen. We celebrate what we do know, what we have experienced, and what we have seen. But we also celebrate the truth that we all still have much to learn and gain together as we continue our life's journey with Jesus. Jesus, the one who took those words from Isaiah and made them his own, as he read out from the scroll in the synagogue that was handed to him in Nazareth. He claimed those words because that is precisely what he came to do. To preach the good news of sins forgiven. New life in all its fullness is found in him. He came to break the chains of life centered on self, to proclaim freedom to those who were imprisoned by injustice and oppression, those who need no longer feel marginalized and trodden down by poverty or by not having everything that everyone else has got, in lots of ways. He came to restore sight to the blind. Sight as understanding of how reality belongs to God, not to humans who have constructed their own without him. And to announce that God is coming to save and to heal and restore his world. This is the big picture that we celebrate. The truth that as church we are called to build community, to help redeem it by living as people of faith within it, with words and actions that love and heal and unite, and above all, acting and living with a desire to introduce others to the Christ who is coming again to bring peace and joy that will never end. When people see the evidence of faith, when they hear our stories, when they see our actions, and they see no discrepancy between them, then our faith tells us that God will do the rest. And that is why we celebrate.